Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. As CFOs, it's our job to protect the financial health of our organizations, not just through proper accounting and financial planning and analysis, but we also need to be relaying the right story to our stakeholders so that they understand what's really happening with our businesses. We need to be able to interpret the data and relay it to our C-suites, our investors, board of directors, and our employees so that they can make the right decisions. Joining me today to talk about how to create compelling data-driven narratives is Akash Kapoor. He is the CFO of Coldblock Technologies, and for over 25 years, he has been advising other business leaders and overseeing financial teams. Akash, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's get started. If you could just tell us a little bit about your prior experience and Coldblock Technologies. Sure. And about the structure of your finance team.
Prior history, I'll give you the nickel tour perhaps, and I'll be less than 2 minutes. Yeah, I went to Queen's University, went to Western University, have a CPA, worked in small, medium enterprises most of my career, kind of where I built a capability and really enjoy working in that environment. Worked in capital markets, worked in accounting, worked in audit, worked in advisory, worked as a CFO, worked as a finance person all throughout 25 plus years. Coldblock, I joined Coldblock a year ago. Coldblock is a laboratory technology company. So we make a piece of equipment that I would suppose to say is in that world, in a very niche world, is like a Netflix revolution in terms of the way that it's being introduced to laboratories. It's like Netflix versus Blockbuster almost. So Coldblock is based in Niagara Falls. It's 9 years old. It is a growing company. It's a scaling company. I came on to help with the scale. Our finance team is small. It is myself and the director of operations who run most of that. And we have external bookkeepers and we have an audit firm. And we are moving at lightning pace. And so history-wise, I've worked in companies all the way up from this size, all the way up to companies that are $400 or $500 million in revenue and growing towards a billion. And that's kind of where we are.
So you've had a huge variety of different experiences, different sized companies,
yes.
Many different stakeholders, I would imagine, that you've been dealing with.
Absolutely.
So when you reflect on that, when you think about finance and our role, how does it relate to storytelling?
Storytelling for me has always been woven into everything in life. It started with my dad kind of telling me, what are you trying to do? You know, like, what is it you're trying to get across? And my mom, you know, she was a lawyer in India. So her job was to tell stories. And, you know, she was a clerk in the Supreme Court in India before she came to Canada. And so I had that intersection with my family where stories became a narrative. And I used to watch the kind of shows that you were mentioning earlier, like Romper Room and Sesame Street and all that. And that's all storytelling. But in terms of finance, I find that our role often is to be the repository of data, almost to use the word oracle. Because everything that comes through an organization has to be in some form that is foundational. And so we have to look after that foundation and then make sure that the end-to-end sort of process around that data makes sense and is true. And that how we parse that across different elements of the business, whether it be our team, external sort of stakeholders, boards, you know, whoever it may be, that story just has to filter differently for all of them. But having the knowledge of that data stream is the most important thing for us to start with. But storytelling has to be the way that we make the numbers come off the page. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just numbers on a page. It doesn't make a lot of sense until you put context around it. In your history, I'd love to hear some of your stories. But for me, it's the everything, right? Our job, you know, I think you've also heard this throughout most of your career, but I've been hearing since I was, you know, in the early days, accounting and finance will be obsolete. Technology will make it obsolete. I would argue the opposite. In fact, data makes us way more important. Technology makes us more essential, in fact, in our roles, because our job isn't to put the numbers together, it's to make sense of them and to make sure that people understand what it is, what it means to them, not what it means to us, what it means to them. We know inherently.
We sit at this interesting intersection within the business where we can see so much across the organization.
Yeah.
And sometimes even I have found take for granted that others see what we see, but they don't, because we have access to a variety of different data and information. And we have a responsibility then to help shine a light in an easy way for others to see what we see, or lead them through making some business decisions. And often being able to tell the story and tell it in a way that resonates depending on who the stakeholder and the audience is, it makes the difference between finance folks that are sought after and invited to the table to come and help in decision making, or being seen as sort of that back office, you know, they're over there counting the money and making sure that the financials are okay.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I had a professor many years ago who used to tell me that the CFO, you never mess with the CFO because they know where the bodies are buried. And, you know, I took that in a very different way. And I think our job is to make that more open and more inviting, because when we tell stories around this, it's not that we know where the bodies are buried, because we do. It is that we can make it more open to the team and invite them into the conversation by telling stories. And we're not holding that data so tightly. And I think we wield that power sometimes as a barrier in a standoffish way, as opposed to making it a breakdown of that silo. And storytelling helps us to break those silos in different ways. And that's one of the major ways to do it, is to have a very solid foundation of data and information.
And so when you're thinking about sharing that financial information, telling the story, what have been some of the challenges that you've found in communicating to different stakeholders?
Yeah, I think the challenges are many. First of all, there is the veracity of the data and the legitimacy of the data. And we want to make sure that that is correct. Otherwise, we're telling story from a sort of a false front, false foundation. And then you get into the people that you're providing that data and the story to. There's different levels of knowledge. There's different levels of engagement. Oftentimes, you've got to figure out whether or not they really care, for the most part. And do I want them to care? Or do I just want to give them the information and move on to the next? If it's a government agency, I kind of just want to give them the facts and move on and not give them too much fluff. If it's an investor, sometimes we have to change the narrative a little bit to suit their need, because we know specifically, if we do our research and we know what we're doing, they have specific trigger points. And so we're tailoring that message. And so figuring that out over time, I think when you're younger and you're starting at this, you tend to default to the data. And I think as you get more experience and you get older, the data becomes less important. Paramount, in fact, that it's good, but the narrative becomes more important as you get further and further along the line. And so I think for younger folks out there trying to figure out, how do I tell a better story? It's just more engagement. It's more understanding of the foundation, making sure you're solid there. I think there's an incumbent knowledge that we have over a number of years that just, it's automatic for us. Sometimes we see something and we kind of know what it should look like. And if it doesn't look that way, we deal with our team internally, but externally, we know how to transmit that to them in different ways. That's the challenge, is figuring out, who are you talking to? What do they need to know? What do I want them to know? What does the company want them to know? What's the perception out there? Like, if we were talking about CoBlock, there are things I would want the outside world to know about CoBlock that they probably wouldn't know because it's such a niche business. Mm. And I want to get that out into the world to say, it is a niche business, but a lot of times niche businesses are the most positive and affluent type businesses. They're the ones that create the best results, because no one's really paying attention until they get to a certain size. And, you know, with CoBlock for us, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it is such a revolutionary technology where the incumbents have been around for 40 years and no one's innovated in that space. So for us, it's telling the story in a way that gets them engaged from something they've been doing their whole lives, careers. You know, they don't want to change. So we got to find a way to make them try it and change and see what it is. And in finance, for me, it's the same thing. Sometimes people get stuck in their ways. I think it should look like this. I've always seen it that way. Well, what if we thought about it like this? You know, for me, the challenge is I try to challenge myself. If I look at something and I'm telling a story, I try to think of five different ways I can tell someone the same thing. It's hard to, with finance, sometimes it's, you know, people think it's boring. It's not. For me, it's, you know, it's a window into everything a business does. It is the foundation. There is that data that sits there. If it just sits on a page, it is dead. It is lifeless. It's our job to give it life.
So when you think about telling stories, how do you leverage technology to help you to be better at doing that?
So the tools at our disposal now versus probably 20 years ago allow us to get that data in a lot faster and quicker. For instance, in the early days of audit and ticking and bopping, we use ledgers and we use casebook and those kind of technologies that were just slow and old computers. Now we have at our fingertips anything you can bring in, any data from any source, from the banks, from vendors, anywhere else in the various tools, and that data is at our fingertips a lot faster. So outside of spreadsheets, solutions like Venna are from past history because we've implemented other places, not at CoBlock, but it gives you that data a lot faster and cleaner and in a more efficient way. It doesn't change the nature of what we do in terms of the storytelling. It makes it a lot easier in one sense because we have the foundation of the data at our fingertips. So we know it's clean and we don't have to vet it as much as we used to and make sure that it was clean and go back to the physical statements and look at it. It's all automatic in that sense. But then the time around how we construct the story around that data remains almost the same, if not more, because the access to that data from those tools is so ubiquitous that people can parse it themselves. These days, someone can put a statement into ChatGPT or an AI tool and get an answer out of it that is only as good as what the software knows. So our job then is to go through and use the technology in the most effective way for the team and for the rest of the folks out there that we're disseminating it to. And we use QuickBooks right now, but we'll eventually evolve into some of the bigger CRMs and the better ERPs. And Venna is certainly one of those solutions that we would look to in the future to make that process a lot simpler. But for me, it's saving time. And if I can get time back in any which way, it helps me to craft the narrative a lot better.
And I think you're absolutely right. There are tools that help us make sure the data is accurate, get it more timely. And then when we start to think about how to integrate some of these technologies with one another to get the story and the visualizations right, as you make changes, there's so much easier now to get those changes to also move through the system and populate, whether it's a dashboard that you've built.
Yeah.
And I think what it takes is us to put energy into thinking, because it could become overwhelming. There's so much of it. What are the core things? What are these key dashboards I want to build if that's the way I'm going to visualize the data? Or what are the templates that I want to be then updating in a monthly presentation? We have to keep on keeping it fresh.
Our head of marketing and I, and we're talking about sometimes when you're in the muck, in the middle of putting things together, it really does help the narrative. And so sometimes the ease of the data and the technology, actually, sometimes you have to almost dig back into it to make it more compelling for yourself to understand, where did that come from? Do I understand the foundation of where it came from? So it is kind of a push and a pull between the technology and the usefulness of it. There's no question that, even visualization tools have changed the nature of how we display the data. Tableau, Power BI, all these various tools that are out there, they make that come to life, as you were saying earlier, in a very simple way, or sometimes in a unique way. I never would have thought of it because there's so many people working on the background.
When you're thinking about getting ready for a data storytelling presentation, what are some of the key elements that you think matter there?
Sure. First of all, is the data correct? Number one, always make sure that that foundation with the team, whoever we're dealing with, is solid so that we're not talking out of turn. Second is, for me, I'd love to hear your perspective on this too. It's who is the audience. It's the simplest parts of storytelling is who are we speaking to and what are we trying to get out of them? And it's, when I talk to Heather and the team, sometimes I have to remember that there's all kinds of skill sets in there. A lot of them are technical on the science side of things. So if I'm talking finance, it must sound like the way they talk to me sometimes about chemistry. And so I have to kind of change the narrative a little bit to be simpler and more direct. And then say, do you have questions around that? Is that understandable? And make it inviting enough for them to do it, but engaging enough also that they are interested. Why does it matter to that particular person? And that's where I start.
I definitely think it matters. Who's my audience? How are they going to want to receive this information? Mm-hmm. And then you frame up how you want that conversation to go while you're presenting. In some cases, you want that presentation to just stand on its own so that it could be distributed and people would get it. It's a bit of a busier one. Sometimes you just want to get some of the key points, but you want your narrative that you're going to be delivering to go with it. And I think sometimes as well, depending on the audience, the more seasoned, the more experienced you're going up in the organization, they often just want to get to the point, and you're trying to convey this in 3-4 slides max, which is, okay, get to the ultimate point and here's the why. And so sometimes you're flipping the way that you're going to present it, depending on who's receiving it and how you think they want to receive the information.
I'll tell you an interesting story. I was on the board at what's now called Feed Ontario. It was Ontario. And so we do our AGM and present to all the food banks in Ontario. So very different audience. And as treasurer of the board at that time, I tried to keep the presentation of finance to less than 5 minutes in one slide. And it was because their wants and needs are very different than what I could have gone on for hours if I really wanted to. But what do they need to know really? What do they truly need to know? And what questions did we anticipate they would ask on the back end of that? This is your organization. You should be interested in these things because this impacts your ability to deliver food. You know, here are the things you need to know, high level. Happy to talk about the details later, you know, but here are the things that happened this year. Here are the things. And, you know, even yesterday, I was mentioning to you earlier that we had a board call. You know, as much as you can prepare for something like that, you kind of have to practice a little bit to understand what are the questions that are going to come back. And the more experience you have, you put yourself in someone else's shoes and you can say, well, if it was me, I would ask this. And then you have the ability to prepare a little bit for that and say, oh, Mom, that's a great question. Let me tell you why. And you don't want to get into the details of that in a presentation, but you're prepared for it. And I think that's the difference. I think over time is that I'm a lot more prepared now for most tangents than I would have been in the past, because I would have been very stuck to a script. Whereas now I can riff like a jazz artist almost. And, you know, if I hear something, you know, a toilet flush or whatever, we can just riff on it and we can figure it out. We have enough experience and time to craft that narrative in a different way on the spot.
One of the things that I find in finance, I've certainly done this myself, is that we fall into the habit of recreating our story, our data the same way all the time. And we don't stop to think about, is there a fresher way to present this? How do I keep this data alive and presenting the right story that I'm telling? Any thoughts you've got about how to keep it fresh?
Again, we go back to that concept of being uncomfortable. Sometimes you're just looking at other presentations and you're looking at the way people do things and craft that narrative. Sometimes it is going to sources that you normally wouldn't go to. Sometimes it's going to the team and practicing in front of them and saying, does this make sense? Sometimes it's going to trusted advisors, mentors, investors, if it's enough to say, here's what we're going to present. What do you think? It's soliciting that feedback. It's that loop of trust and transparency sometimes that keeps it fresh. But getting it in front of different audiences that would care and getting that sort of solution back. I think it's much like software engineering. If you don't go to the client and kind of figure out what they care about, you're building something in a bubble. So trying to keep something fresh is taking it out of our own incumbent bubbles and being a little bit open with it to say, this is how we present things. What do you think?
And sometimes in that process, you find out something that used to matter doesn't matter now. Exactly. And you're populating and using up some of this key real estate, because we talked about the need to keep it succinct. If there's something there that you can remove, it gives you room for maybe something else that you could talk about that matters more to the audience.
There's very few books out there that stand the test of time. And the ones that are evolving over time, they're looking at their audience and how they've changed. And, you know, are they meant to be classics? Are they meant to be for that point in time? That's kind of what we do.
Clearly, experience helps in becoming a better storyteller. Are there some key things along the way that you would recommend to others who are looking to become better storytellers that have helped you to get better, more proficient at this?
Absolutely. I think the first thing is to practice. And practice means putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. It is meeting people that you normally wouldn't meet and telling them a story that they normally wouldn't hear, and taking the feedback and being open to it and not being afraid. I think a lot of times now, and I don't know what your experience is, but I love to hear it also, it's a lot of times people are afraid to put themselves out there, especially when it comes to when there's hierarchies and businesses and all that. It's our job to let them know it's okay. You know, one of my old bosses in capital markets used to tell me, you know, we'd sit like this. It was just the two of us. And he said, you and I can argue all day long about everything. I want you to hone your craft and be better at the things you do. And he's the one that told me, you know, he was a chairman at that time. And he's like, you know, what we do is 5% science and 95% art. He said, you are useless to me until you learn that 95%, because I can get that 5% from anyone. He goes, you got to really learn how to get that hard part. It's not just soft skills. It's understanding the room. It's reading the tone. It's understanding the nuance of what's coming out. It's all those different things. So you can practice those things with the right mentorship and the right partners and having the right organization to provide you the breadth to do that. A lot of times you don't get that. And when you find it, I think that would be the biggest advice I could give to anyone is find the people that are willing to let you make mistakes and help you learn from them. And that's storytelling is that. I don't think anyone ever wrote their first novel on the first try. I don't think any journalist ever puts a first draft into print. It's understanding that there's a process to these things. And as you get better at understanding your craft, so number one, go back on what I said originally, know your craft. Mm-hmm. Be the best in the world at your craft. Understand the data and the foundation of what you do. And that doesn't just apply to finance, that applies to everything. But in finance in particular, if you don't know the accounting rules, you don't know the finance rules, you don't understand that, how are you going to craft a narrative around it? Someone can trip you up in a second. So you got to get really good at what you do first and then practice that as you go. Ask people, does that make sense? Does it not make sense? Am I getting the point across? You know, my fear with a lot of these kind of conversations is that it seems really simple, the things that we say. The execution of this stuff is hard. It takes time. It is thoughtful. I was talking to their CEO, Craig, the other day. And, you know, we were both up at 3 because we couldn't sleep, as I'm sure you've felt many times. And we're like, how do we tell this story better? What are we not getting across to the team, to investors, to this? And it was just something that came up. And we both hammered in on the same point because we've known each other for 30 plus years. We're on the same floor at Queens. We know each other really well, and we have a great relationship where we can be open with each other and have that sort of camaraderie around. We are not afraid to put ourselves out there. Even at our levels, we're not afraid to put ourselves out there. We want our teams to be the same. It's hard. It's hard to convince them that it's okay.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
We want our teams to be the same. It's hard. It's hard to convince them that it's okay.
You touch on a couple of really key points there, I think, which is putting yourself in uncomfortable situations, for sure. Having a place you can bounce your ideas off safely, especially if you don't know the audience and you want somebody else who may know that audience better, being able to say, here's what I'm thinking. How will it land? Sometimes I've just gotten the most amazing feedback that helped me to be better prepared or change the way I was going to tell the story. You know, you talked about asking for feedback. Even afterwards, how did it go? Or what could I do better? I used to work with somebody and she used to say, feedback is a gift. And I loved that because she really ingrained that in her team to the point where whether I'd go in a customer discussion with them or they'd be leading a project. And many times after, her teammates would come and ask for feedback on how they did. And I thought just that simple, taking that time for one, putting yourself out there to ask for feedback, knowing you may hear some stuff back that's hard to hear, but wanting it. And then as the person being asked for feedback, you want to be thoughtful now in giving something constructive and you appreciate that they're together trying to find ways to get better at this. And so I agree, it's an uncomfortable thing, but everyone should be soliciting that feedback to get better at what we're doing.
It's interesting. There's this organization I was helping out with, a good friend of mine, Ben Baldwin. He runs the Founder City Project. And the idea behind it was a lot like Young Professionals Organization, YPO and EO, those kind of places, but creating psychologically safe places for people to have conversations is a really difficult thing to do because there's a lot of trust involved in that. Asking for feedback is a trust thing. And if you don't ingrain it, if you punish someone for asking you dumb questions, you've killed the trust. They're not going to do it. So I think that's another one of those kind of hard things is setting up that environment for that. Like you mentioned, she solicited that from the team. They come to her. They trust that it is open. If that trust didn't exist, it seems so simple, but trust is so easily broken. And then we live in a very, a consumption of data is so tight these days. We want things in small packages. We don't have long conversations. Mm-hmm. It's tough to build trust in that environment. So it becomes even harder for finance professionals to get across things that are complicated often, to keep it simple kind of process in simple ways. Sometimes that soundbite isn't enough and you need to give them more, but you have to give them enough to keep them engaged. It's kind of that push and pull.
100%. So can you give us an example of a time where you were able to tell the story of the data and it had a major impact on your business?
Sure. Yeah. We at CodeBlock, we just completed an equity raise. So in telling the story probably 100 times over the past several months to various levels of investors and interested parties and even prior investors and funds and, angel networks and all the rest, when we're using the data to start with the story, because oftentimes they ask, well, how are you doing? Where do you stand? We don't want to know just where you're going. We want to know where you came from. And so in our crafting of the narrative to start with, we started with the foundation. Where are we? Factually, we don't want to tell things out of turn. And we start with the facts and we're very transparent about that. But the impact of us being transparent in that way and having those conversations openly as opposed to just presenting off a piece of paper. I think one of the pieces of feedback we got from one of the investors was, you guys are way too open. And I was like, why is that a problem? He goes, it's not a problem. He goes, you're just not used to it. And he goes, that transparency means that you want a partnership out of what we're doing. So where we started with that foundation of the data led us into a place where we were comfortable enough with what we were telling because we told it a number of times, but that gave us a foundation to then craft the future of the business. And it was believable enough because we were telling the truth about, and we were solid in what we knew. I think that was kind of where there was a distinct difference in the way that fundraising had been done in the past and really changed the nature. And this was probably one of the toughest environments to raise money in that I'd seen in probably 25 years outside of, Asian flu times and all the rest. But it resonated with people, and I think people are clamoring for authenticity and transparency. And when you have that foundation in the data, and you can be clear about the data, then you can tell a story that's believable.
And in telling that story of the data, how important was the data visualization?
Depends on the audience. I think there's a generational thing with some of that. For some people that just want to get to the point and where do you stand and where are you going? They just want to talk to you and understand where it is and they want the financials. For others, they need to see some of the visualization in terms of, here's where you were in a chart and you can see kind of the growth out of that. But the visualization for me is more in the narrative of what it is you're crafting. And so, tools like Tableau that we've used in the past or, even QuickBooks are okay. But it's more of how we want to present it. So it's important, I think, in broader audiences, when we're telling it to a number of people, it becomes way more important. Because you don't know what everyone's kind of wants and needs are at that point in time. So you do have to have visualization in terms of what we're showing to get the point across to a broad audience. But when it's tailored and it's more one-on-one, it is more about the actual narrative that's coming out of our mouths mm-hmm. as opposed to what we're presenting. They're looking at us and saying, do we believe them? But in a bigger presentation, visualization is essential, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. And I find the visualization can help me get across what I'm seeing in the data. You know, hey, this is a great trend, or here's a problem area. We need to look there. Mm-hmm. By putting it in a picture, it's a way quicker way to get the point across of it's going up and to the right, or this, there was a blip, or we have some inconsistency that's happening here, that quickly people get it when they see the picture.
Yeah.
And you don't need to then look at all of the data points to understand what you're trying to get to. The other part in all that is when you start to correlate a couple pieces of data mm-hmm. to show how together this might be pointing to something. And I'd say the third one is often in trying to create the picture, I used to, when I started my career, think I don't need to spend a lot of time in my PowerPoint presentation making it look pretty. That's a waste of time. But I've really changed in that if you do spend some time caring about the way it's going to look, it is going to help the other person. Where do I want them to look on the page? And have I made this look really clean and easy to understand? Mm-hmm. I might have started with a list of 10 bullet points that I was just going to talk through. But as you try to put it into, whether it's squares, quadrants, you start to realize I need fewer. And maybe some of these points are actually duplicating each other. And there's actually a core point that crosses two or three of them. And so in doing that, it helps you yourself to synthesize the story you're about to tell and better understand it and make it easier for the audience. Because if I go in with 10 bullet points, I'm going to lose the crowd because they're just not going to want to sit and listen to all 10, but three or four.
It's a great point. It's, you know, I was mentioned to you earlier, we had a board meeting yesterday and we're going through the financials and I had a chart for the 9 years of history that I hadn't seen. And it was a visual. Didn't have to say a lot. It just showed it. It showed, you know, and it, for them, the questions became a lot more succinct, a lot more direct. Why did it do that? And so, yeah, you're right. I triggered a few memories.
Well, they say a picture's worth a thousand words, right?
Exactly.
So when you're thinking about getting the story together, how do you go about collaborating with other departments to bring it together so it's holistically, because sometimes we're not just telling the finance story, it's a story that's going to affect other teams, other departments.
I think our job is to break down silos across the business. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people think it's a, you know, we had this conversation yesterday with the lab. They were talking about a customer call and whatever else. And they said, well, that person took that over from there. So let's make one thing clear. These are our customers. They're not marketing's customers. They're not operations customers, not my customers. They're our customers. We have to deal with them holistically. Mm-hmm. So we have to talk to each other to figure out what's the best approach to that customer. So the approach that I tend to take is solicit feedback broadly and openly and say, what do you think about this? This is what we're planning to do. How do you guys take, what is your take on that? How does the work that you're doing apply? Does it apply? Why doesn't it apply? You know, it's more of the having the openness, and as we talked about before, the safety for them to talk to us openly about what it is we're putting together. And I will actively solicit their feedback. I won't sit back and wait for them. I want them to be a part of it. They have to be. I found, we talked about this before, but I find the most powerful organizations are the ones that can break those down, but be partners with each other internally. Sometimes it's the hardest thing to do because we create these, you know, Marvel superhero type scenarios where there's us versus them, you know, operations versus finance. I try to break that down actively. And I'm cognizant of the fact that a lot of times those silos happen naturally as we get bigger, and trying to maintain that camaraderie between the team all the way up and down and across is extremely difficult sometimes when you get really busy. But actively soliciting it, I think that's again why we have the C in front of our name sometimes, is because we can break down those things by having those conversations and saying, no, we need to have that conversation. Come sit at the table. Right. And so that's kind of the tact. I don't know if I'm answering your question in the right way, but For me, it's more the ether, right? The in-between spaces of things where, you know, the existence of a silo is fine, but it's the in-between spaces of what does that mean for all of us? It's the hard part to get across. It's the stuff that is intangible that makes us successful. And having that understanding amongst the team, first and foremost, and being pretty direct about it sometimes and saying, we need you. We can't do this alone. You know, it's not just a sales function. It's not just this. It all integrates at some point. I think it's also showing them what it means when something, you know, over here happens. How does it affect me when I'm talking to the board? Or how does it affect me when I'm talking to an investor or a government agency? How does that impact over here in the lab affect that over here on the reporting side of things and in conversation? If they start to be a part of that and really understand it and truly engage in it, then we become more powerful, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. I always try to avoid surprises. If there's something that's going to be in this part of the story that maybe somebody who's really who's closer to it is going to feel surprised to see, I try to head that off and make sure that they're aware and see what I see. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that might refine the story as well as you learn something else that maybe you were missing in what you were telling. But agree about, you know, the responsibility for us to break down those silos and at the end of the day, make the story not just be finance numbers on a page, but something that's going to drive the company. Can you tell me about any techniques that you might use to keep the audience engaged when you're giving a financial presentation?
Short, brief. It's a lot of times people come in with their preconceived notions about what we are. Yeah, we're that back office function. It's trying to find something that will catch their ear or catch their eye in terms of a visualization. Mm-hmm. It comes back to the very simplest element of what we do in storytelling. It is, who's our audience and what do they care about? And how do I capture them right away? So they almost want to ask the questions. I'm trying to find a way to solicit their feedback live. Right. So is there something I can put on that presentation page that will catch them right away? Right. And draw them in and make it about them. I prefer not. This is very unusual for me. I don't like being in front of cameras and things like that. I prefer to be in the background. But a lot of times it's just being honest with them and saying, here's what I think you need to know. What do you think?
One of the things that I find we sometimes do in finance too is our presentations become stale. Mm-hmm. We fall into using the same thing over and over. Any techniques or tips you have for how you keep your financial presentations alive?
Yeah, absolutely. You asked me before what tips I have for younger folks that are learning how to storytell. I try to actively do the same thing. I go to places where I talk to people that normally wouldn't look at some of this stuff, and I tell them the story. Say, what do you think? I'm like, oh, that's boring. You know? Have you thought about this? And they're coming from some different place, so they can give you some insight. I also talk to the network of financial professionals that we all have. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they're trying things and they'll say something that just triggers it. You know, I play golf with a few people on occasion who I've known for my whole life. And they're in different fields and do different things. And sometimes we talk about things and they'll give, you know, the other day I was doing XYZ and I think, I never really thought of it that way. For me, keeping fresh is being open and not being so arrogant about the fact that, you know, we have a title. It doesn't matter. You know, in the end of the day, it really doesn't matter what the title is. It's being open to learning. And being open to new ways of doing things. I see the things that Venna's doing and the solutions you're providing. We're talking about this morning, actually, is like, why is it useful? I think the more that we get data to be in that, you know, technology involved with data, it actually makes our job a lot harder because we get the data faster and more refined. Mm-hmm. And now we got to really think about, and people have access to all that data more so than they used to in the past where it was tightly held. So now we got to think about the narrative. Why is it important for you to understand what's on that page? People will come to their own conclusions very quickly when it's that clean. Do we have to unteach them and then reteach them what it actually means for our business? I don't know. There's so many ways to keep it fresh. And part of it is the technology. Part of it is relearning your own craft constantly and having the humility to kind of go through that process with people that are, there's always going to be someone better. There's always going to be someone more insightful. Sometimes I go to my, you know, my dad, he's 80. And I ask, I say, hey, what do you think? To ask my mom, is that understandable? And she's like, no. you got to go down this path. You got to do different things. And so, you know, sometimes it's, you know, a lot of times I take my cues from the kids too. Like there's my nephews and nieces are young, but when I was in capital markets and we were watching telecom and cable at that time and understanding, you know, how is that landscape going to change? When we're looking at the 10 and 13 year olds consuming things on their phone, we're like, and Netflix was $3 a share, right? I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Look at what they're doing. That will never change. These guys hold the content so tightly. If we were so insular and arrogant in our approach to what things used to be, how could we learn anything new in the future?
No, great example for sure. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation. We're both very passionate about how do we bring those numbers to life and tell the story. So I love hearing some of your thoughts and experiences. Now, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions. So are you ready?
Sure. Yeah.
What is your go-to strategy for staying productive during the workday?
For me, it's very simple. I schedule time in my day for myself. I mean, physically schedule it into my calendar. No one's allowed to contact me at certain points in the day. So I have time to think, reflect, and do it. But it became a habit over time where I have set times where I need to have that. It keeps me fresh all throughout the day. It gives me a little bit of, it's not a break. It's more of a reflection time to absorb all the stuff that's coming at us from a thousand different directions.
Very hard to keep that time blocked. So kudos to you for doing that. The second question is, what helps you turn a bad day around?
Three things. My nephew and nieces will FaceTime, and kids have no fear and they're all joy. See their faces instantly better. Two, every once in a while, there are some folks in an organization that are so energetic and enthusiastic and positive. You have a 15-minute conversation with them about whatever, whether it be business or life or whatever, it turns everything upside down. And the third thing for me has always been perspective. It's just business. Life is so vast and so wide. There's so many things going on. It's just business. It's important and it's paramount a lot of times, but it's just that. And we'll get through it or we won't. The more important things are, do we have enough food? Are our families healthy? Is everyone around us feeling okay? That's what gets me through the day.
Perspective is everything, right?
Everything.
Thank you so much. Really appreciated you joining me.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. Looking for more great CFO show content? Sign up for our free newsletter. Each week, you'll get a roundup of exclusive content to help you grow and drive strategic transformation. For the CFO show, I'm your host, Melissa Howitson. Until next time.